Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Muslimah Podcast. I'm Asma, your host. Today, we are going to be talking about a topic I feel like we do not speak about enough. As young Muslim women, obviously, we get to a point where people start to mention relationships and marriage. And oftentimes, we are just thrown into it out of nowhere. We finish college, we finish grad school. Whenever someone has started to speak to you about it, I'm sure that you feel confused, overwhelmed, just like I did. Today, Aisha and I are going to be talking about the marriage conversation and navigating the talking stage as a Muslim woman. It's a really interesting conversation. We talk about green flags, red flags, how to get to know someone, how to even prepare yourself to get to know someone, because there's definitely a lot of self-preparation involved. This is a really great conversation, and it's only part one of two. We will be releasing another part in a couple of weeks, inshallah. I would definitely recommend you to listen, anyone 18 and above, even if you haven't really engaged with the whole relationship and marriage conversation yet, this is definitely a great place to start. A lot of the things in this episode I wish I knew a couple of years ago. So yeah, I can't wait for you to hear it, and thank you for tuning in. Assalamu alaikum, Aisha. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. As you all know, we have a very exciting topic, centered around being a single Muslim woman in your 20s. We definitely have a lot to talk about, but why don't we start off with introducing yourself?
Alaikum assalam, Asman. Thank you so much for having me on here. I am so grateful for this opportunity to talk about this. So my name is Aisha. I'm 27. I'm born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. Right now, I work as a data analyst, and I am looking to change my field, so that's a whole different conversation, but my family, I have an older brother who's a year older than me, and I have a sister who's a few years younger. And I'm just here to talk about this topic because I feel like it's very ignored, and I think this topic deserves more attention. I feel like we're doing a disservice to a lot of young Muslim men and young Muslim women by not talking about what it's like being single and finding someone and that whole process and how exhausting it can be. So I think it's really important to shed some light on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I completely agree. I feel like when you turn 20 or somewhere around there, when you turn 22, you're just like all of a sudden like thrown into it. Like, at least from my perspective, it was like, don't talk to boys. And then it was like, well, when are you getting married? And I'm like, wait, what? Like, I just felt very confused. So I feel you on that. So I'm glad that we are having this conversation. On that topic, once we get into our 20s, like, we start to feel this pressure to put ourselves out there, whether that's from family, friends, society, you know, everyone's telling us to get to know someone, see what's out there, try to find our soulmate. You might have friends or family members wanting to introduce you to someone. You might be encouraged to like attend a matchmaking event or get on the apps. And like, you might feel lost when people are suggesting these things to you, which is totally natural. So Aisha, how did that feel for you? And how did you get comfortable enough to put yourself out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I just want to give some context to my situation. So I was born and raised in a Muslim community, very conservative, went to Islamic school my whole life, and was very much taught that don't approach boys, don't talk to boys, look at the ground when you're walking. And so all throughout my life, I never felt the desire to have any guy friends or to even talk to guys. And this continued through when I went to public high school and when I went to public college. It was never a thought. I just always worried about school and just getting through the day and making my own friends, which were girls. So now present day in my family, in my cousin group, about like 5 to 10 people, they're all around my same age and they all got married at 24. So I'm the only single person. And I don't think it really hit me until the pandemic. And that was kind of a shock that like, oh, everyone's married. Maybe you should do something about this. And I admit it was really scary and daunting at first because it's new territory, right? Everyone I knew had met someone in college. And so it was very easy for them to you know, just naturally fall in love and get married. But this is a like whole new territory, and I had no idea what I'm getting into. So I think it took me at least 3 to 4 months to even hype myself up enough to like get on the apps or to approach someone or to even communicate with the people that were brought to me. And it is a lot because, again, I had no frame of reference. I had no idea what I was doing. And everyone I asked just gave very, like, you know, generic advice, like, oh, you'll figure it out, which I eventually did. But it was hard, you know, and it's like you put yourself through a lot of embarrassing situations, and you will make a lot of mistakes. I made plenty of mistakes. But I think I took the pressure off on myself just to make it like a learning experience. Because again, I had no frame of reference. So I just wanted that, like, at least having a barometer of like, okay, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So I just started doing it for the experience and understanding I'm not responsible for the outcome and that I'm only responsible for making the effort. And that's all that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing. I do want to ask you, when you said like hyping yourself up, that it took you a couple of months, can you expand a little more on like what that really meant and what you had to do to like hype yourself up to, you know, get yourself out there?
Yeah, definitely. So for me, I actually ended up, I explored this in therapy because I think it was very difficult for me to go from almost like hating men, in a sense, just being so against the idea of marriage and being like, why do I have to do this? Why is everyone shoving it down my throat? Like, this is too much. And I had to really unpack why I felt that way and ask myself questions like, oh, like, you know, why do you feel this way? What is causing this reaction? And so after unloading that with my therapist, I think that was really important for me to understand myself and to be more open to the idea of marriage, because I went from like, I guess, a complete polar opposite to being like, I hate men, I hate everything, to now then being able to be open to the idea of marriage. And I think that required a lot of restructuring of like the frameworks of marriage that I had in my brain, which is what does marriage look like? You know, how do I want my marriage to look like? And viewing other people's marriages as well and realizing it's not like a perfect fairy tale. Everyone's on their own journey. Everyone's doing what they can. So taking the pressure off, going to therapy, journaling, really reflecting of who I am, what I like, and figuring out where I want to go from there.
Wow, mashallah. I'm so glad that you were able to do all of that introspection. That's really awesome, mashallah. And we're going to talk about that more later. Like, you really have to know yourself before you get to know someone else. So the next thing that we are going to talk about is the talking stage, which I think people have the most questions about because it's so new, especially when you're doing it for the first time. So say, like, you know, you've been introduced to someone or like someone on an app, or, you know, there's so many different ways to meet people, and we have to get to know someone a little bit before thinking about marriage. So what are some tips that you have for talking to someone, keeping it respectful while also getting to know them?
Yeah, definitely. The talking stage is definitely very daunting because, you know, first you go from approaching people and figuring out how to get yourself out there. And then I guess you're in the next phase where you're like actually speaking to a living, breathing human and you're like, oh, great. What do I do now? Where do I go from here? There's nothing in the manual for this part. So it's very much, again, the first thing that I always try to do is understand my own mindset and my intentions. Like, why am I trying to talk to someone? What is the purpose of this? So my purpose is, inshallah, I want to find a spouse, you know, and get married for the sake of Allah. That is my purpose. So I make that known right away. you know, I want to know, like, are you here to waste my time? Do you just want to be friends? Or are you looking for a life partner? So I think making that very clear up front, really, it can scare a lot of people away, and that's okay. It's better to scare people off at first than down the line, you know, rip off that band-aid. And I think other tips I would say is, it's a lot of trial and error if you're inexperienced, like I am or I was, because you don't understand what you like or what you dislike. You know, you have no measuring system. Like, it's very different than talking to your coworkers or talking to a classmate. You're talking to someone for the purpose of a lifelong commitment. So it's a very different conversation. So at first, you're not going to know what you like. So the best thing to do is just trust yourself and figure it out. Talk to a lot of people to gauge your preferences. You know, for example, do you prefer someone who's very loud, extroverted, they like to be the life of the party? Or do you prefer someone who's in the corner, someone who's, they're still confident, but they're more introverted? And right away, you might say, oh, yeah, I like extroverted people. But it's in doing those conversations, you can understand, oh, wait, maybe extroverted is not really my cup of tea. So those things will change, will adapt as you talk to more people. And I would say another thing is, really pay attention to how you are feeling when you're talking to this person. Really take into account about if you're performing, you know, are you acting in a way that makes the other person like you, but internally you don't feel like you like them, right? So always bring it back to yourself. Do I like this person? Do I like the vibe they're giving? Do I feel anxious? How is this conversation going? Am I putting in more effort? You know, it's a lot of trial and error. It's like, it's a dance almost, right? They put in some effort, you put in some effort, and then you figure out if both sides are contributing equally, then eventually, you know, it ends up in marriage, inshallah. But it's also understanding that marriage is not, or the wedding is not the end goal. Your marriage is the end goal, and the point of your marriage should be, you know, it fulfills you in this dunya and the akhirah. It helps you get into Jannah. So understanding that as your base point will really save you from a lot of heartbreak and a lot of trouble, because once you bring it back to that point that, hey, this person is kind of wasting my time, they're not communicating as much, then you can understand that, oh, they might not have the same priorities as me. So they might not have the same view of marriage as being the end goal to Jannah. So it's very important to understand that this person is an investment. You know, you're in this for a long run. You know, this is your life partner. This is your life story. It's not a love story, it's your life story. So understanding that this is the person that's going to see you at your highest, your lowest points. You're going to wake up next to this person. You're going to have maybe not so many great moments, a lot of happy moments. And you really want to take into account who you're choosing. It's a very big decision. But at the end of the day, that decision falls on you and you alone. And I think it's very important to ignore that outside noise, right? So it's a lot of trial and error, figuring out what you like, and just seeing if you can have a regular conversation, if you vibe together, and figuring out your end goals and identifying if you're going to make an investment in this person for the long run.
Wow, Aisha, I'm blown away. Like, I wish someone had told me all of this before I started this whole process. Mashallah, you really have a good head on your shoulders. Thank you for all of those tips. I would like to add also, just from a more logistical perspective, something that I've learned also through trial and error is that talking on the phone, at least for me, and Aisha, feel free to chime in, talking on the phone is way better than texting, especially when you're first, like, introduced to someone. I feel like talking like over words, you can't really assess someone's vibe, and like you can't assess if you're actually connecting with them. So I would say if you're introduced to someone, if you're feeling up to it, just talk on the phone. Just call them. You don't have to FaceTime if you don't want to. Like, just the phone is fine, but hearing someone's voice, hearing like how they feel about things, because you can hear how someone is expressing themselves so much better over the phone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then sometimes after that one phone call, you're like, that wasn't really a match. Or like, you know, oh, maybe like I'll explore this a little bit more. Whereas if you're texting for like a week, you still have no idea what that person is like, you know? So I really definitely learned that the hard way. So I would suggest doing a phone call first. So moving on to more things about the talking stage, Aisha, what are some red flags to look out for when you're talking to someone?
Oh, well, there's plenty. I have a whole Google Doc on this, but I guess the abridged, the shortened version of it is, if someone if they don't want to get their parents involved, and I'm talking about like, let's say you've been talking for like a month, 2 months, 3 months, and you feel like this could go somewhere further, right? And that person is very hesitant to inform their parents. That's the biggest red flag, because that is the biggest red flag, right? Because that shows they're not serious. Maybe they're hiding something. Maybe they just see you as a fling. So I think getting parents involved is very crucial to moving on to the next steps. And if that person doesn't want to move on to that, to the first step, that just shows they're not ready. Other things are just communication issues, right? So if someone only communicates when it's convenient for them, right? So they'll only be texting you at 2 a.m. in the morning, right? No phone calls, just text. And I feel like texts are very low effort things to do. And like you said before, I think phone calls are a better way to gauge someone's character and someone's vibe. Other red flags are if you feel like you're putting in most of the effort, like they take no initiative themselves. They're not scheduling phone calls. They're not, you know, like buying you things. They're not doing things that shows that they want to have a relationship with you. Or the opposite end, it's like sometimes people move way too fast. They tell you that, you know, they're the love of your life after the first phone call. And that's a little too extreme. Like moving at a pace that you're uncomfortable with, some people are fine with that. But for the most part, like saying you're the love of your life after the first time of talking to you is unrealistic. Other things are if they're not accountable for their mistakes. You know, we all make mistakes. We're all imperfect people. But the number one thing is you want to have integrity and take accountability for when you do make a mistake. So you apologize and you want to do better. A lot of people, they don't apologize. They keep making that mistake over and over again. And it just shows that it's a lack of maturity. And this isn't someone that you want to stay with, because it's a repetitive pattern. It will keep happening. Other things are, you know, gaslighting, making you feel like you're crazy, such as like, oh, why, like, you know, why are you mad? You don't need to be mad. That's not a good thing to say. And making someone feel down for expressing their emotions, that's not someone you want to be with. Because that again, that's going to continue to snowball into something worse. So again, there's several red flags, but the main thing is pay attention to how you feel. Is this person making you uncomfortable? Do you feel like they're asking you too much? Do you feel like they're not doing enough? Do you feel unheard? Do you feel like, you know, just unsettled inside? Do you feel anxious? So those things are subtle signs that this person isn't right for you. And other things to look for too are look at your own eating habits and sleeping habits, or if you get random pains, One time I was speaking to someone, and the entire time we were speaking, like maybe 3 to 4 months, I had this back pain and I couldn't explain it. And I had it every day. And then the day after we stopped speaking, it just went away.
Oh my God. So, SubhanAllah. What? What?
I think it was my body trying to tell me that, like, hey, this person isn't right for you. Or even, you know, if you're a woman, like, look at your period cycles, because stress can impact a lot of things. That's happened to me before too, where it messed up my period cycle because I was that stressed internally, but I didn't think I was stressed, you know, but then it shows up in your sleeping habits, random pains, your diet, you know, so really take into account everything that you're feeling to be like, hey, is my body actively rejecting this person and I don't understand it yet?
Absolutely. That is so crazy that you say that, because actually, like, a very similar thing happened to me. I was like speaking to someone too, and this was a little bit shorter, but I could not get like a full night's sleep, like, while I was talking to this person. And I was like, I didn't like see any major like red flags from this person. I was just still getting to know them. Like, it was a pretty short thing. I literally could not sleep at night. Like, it was crazy. And then the day after, like, you know, I kind of like said like, no, I don't think this is gonna work out. I slept like a baby, like literally like a baby. Like, I slept the whole night. I was like, oh. And like, all my sleeping issues like went away. Like, I was totally fine after that. So it's just, it's really crazy. And I'm so glad someone else said it, because I thought maybe it was just me. Sometimes your body is like giving you a message. You're very correct about that.
Yeah. And I've looked into it. I thought I was crazy, but turns out like people go through other things like that, where they like experience random hair loss or like random pains, and they think they're crazy, but then turns out it's like a big stressor in their life, like a relationship ending, and you wouldn't connect those two until it actually happens. So we're not crazy. It's normal. It happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna add one more red flag as well. How this person like treats the other people in their life. So it might be hard to gauge, especially if you're getting to know someone like virtually, who like doesn't live in the same place as you, but try to figure out, how do they treat, you know, their mom, their dad, their other family members, siblings? How do they treat people like their professors, or like if they're in school, or like their coworkers? Do they talk badly about other people to you? Are they like, oh, so-and-so is so annoying, or so-and-so did this, and like, I hate this, you know, because how they treat the people around them is a big, you know, factor into how much they respect people and how much they're going to respect their future partner. You know what I mean? So really looking into that, especially with family, if you're a family oriented person, like if you get married to someone, you are their family, right? So looking at how they treat their family and how they respect their family and how they speak about them, they speak about people in their family with high regard and high respect, even when they disagree with them. That is a green flag. But if they're, you know, speaking with their family in a disrespectful way and just kind of being like, oh, like, you know, that can maybe be a red flag in some cases.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. And I think I would also like to add how people treat, you know, wait staff or like servers or other employees or people in roles that, you know, they can't benefit from, right? Just as simple as like saying please and thank you, not being rude to the server, like tipping them appropriately, all these things, I think are a very big indicator of someone's character, and definitely how they speak about the people around them. I remember I was talking to someone once, and in the first conversation, he said, yeah, my sister is really toxic. And that took me aback, because I'm like, what in the world? Like, who says that? And this is the first time that I'm talking to you too. So that's a lot to unload at once. And that was like the last conversation I had with him, because again, I was like, if he speaks about his sister that way, I think that's only telling about other relationships in his life. So definitely respect family, other people around them, strangers. Those are all signs of good character.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we kind of touched on this a little bit, but what are some green flags to look out for when you're talking to someone?
Yes. So green flags, there's a lot of these too. I think the most important thing is how you're feeling, right? So if you feel content, if you feel calm, if you feel not anxious, and if you feel almost, I would say in a way, if you find it boring a little, I think that's a healthy relationship. You know, if you feel very comfortable with yourself, other green flags are, you know, if both of you are kind of doing this dance of putting equal effort in, right? Like, let's say he sends you a Starbucks gift card, then maybe next week you send him like a Nike gift card, things like that, where it's like both sides are equally responding to that effort. And I think the number one thing is if the guy is very forward with how he feels about you and he does this relatively quickly. So I'm not talking about like professing his love, but you know, just initially saying like, hey, I really like you and I want to continue where this goes. You know, someone who lets their feelings be known and lets their intentions made very clear from the get-go. I feel like that's very rare, and it hasn't happened to me too often, but when it does happen, I'm like, wow, this is someone who's very secure in themselves. They know what they want and they recognize that, and they're able to tell me that. They're not like, I'll keep her guessing, right? They're very forward. And I think other green flags are just like, you know, they're kind and that they respect you. I think respect is very essential. Respect is very different from love. Respect means they respect your choices, your opinions. Even if you disagree, they respect your hobbies, your lifestyle, all these things, because I think respect is more essential for a relationship than love. Love isn't completely necessary, but in order to have love, you need to have respect. Respect is the backbone. And if someone respects you, then they can do everything else. You know, and just like, again, how they treat people, if they prioritize religion, if that's something that's important to you, if they communicate to you, if they make plans, they take the initiative, and they make you feel good about yourself. You know, I think that's very important too. Not just compliments, they support you in every aspect of your life. They want to see you grow. They want to see you achieve. They're your best friend in that aspect. So again, it sounds kind of like a fairy tale, but I feel like there are people like that out there. Yeah.
That was a great list of green flags. That was an amazing combination. I think I would also say, like, make sure that you're doing the istighara dua throughout all of this. I think that has really been such a great foundation for me. I don't know about you, Aisha, but, like, while you're, like, you know, paying attention to how you're feeling, like, all the things Aisha was saying, like, make sure that you are doing that dua, because it really helps you, like, kind of, you know, anchor all of this in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and ask him, like, hey, is this the right thing for me? And honestly, istikhara dua, I've used it for a lot of different things besides even, like, marriage-related stuff. And it really has helped me a lot. And it's not always, like, you're waiting for, like, a dream to come to you, because it's not always going to be a dream. But sometimes it's just a feeling, or sometimes, like, a door will open up for you and you're like, wait, like, I think I'm kind of getting the feeling that this is the best option for me, you know? So definitely, like, while you're feeling this person out and looking out for all the things that were just mentioned, like, definitely do the dua. Also, like, watch out for people pleasing, because I think especially as women, I know I've caught myself doing this, we tend to do things just to please the other person, but, like, then, like, the relationship kind of proceeds, and then it proceeds because of you, you know? Like, are you actually enjoying his energy, the person you're talking to, or are you enjoying your own energy because you are trying to please him by being a certain way, saying certain things that aren't actually, like, authentic to how you are? And I think, especially as women, we have a tendency to do this.
Yeah, definitely. I think I just want to touch on the istikhara a bit. I think that's very key to this entire process. I like to make a habit of, you know, either reciting the dua or, you know, praying the two nafl and then reciting the dua, like, very often and very frequently throughout the process. especially because I'll share one story. So one time when I was doing this, I did it, I think every day or every other day. And I didn't have a clear idea. I was like, I'm just going to keep doing this until, I don't know, until something happens. And so I kept doing it. I kept doing it. I kept doing it. And one day I started feeling anxious about this person suddenly. And it just, my heart was feeling really unsettled. And so that to me was a sign that, okay, we got to wrap this up. And it was, because then it made me realize, wait, things aren't as good as they actually are. Let's take account of what's happening. And once I kind of opened my eyes a little bit more, I realized, okay, I don't like the direction this is going in. And I think I need to remove myself from the situation. And I'm telling you, as soon as I ended that, I cannot describe the relief I felt. Like, it's like a weight being lifted off your chest. It was like incredible, but at the same time, very sad, of course, very heartbreaking, because, you know, you put all your heart and soul into making things work out with people. And when it doesn't, it's obviously very sad. But at the same time, I felt relieved because I knew that this decision was what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted for me, and that my story doesn't end there. This is just a chapter of that story, but there's more to come. So it was a lot of feelings, but I'm so grateful that I did it.
Definitely a lot of feelings. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, kind of going off of that, when you do get that feeling like, oh, like maybe this is not going to work out, what do you do? Because I've had to go through this a few times. I'm sure you have as well. Like, how do you go through telling someone that this isn't going to move forward?
Yeah, it's definitely not a fun conversation to have. I think it's recognizing a lot of things, right? So you are doing someone a kindness by ending things where they are instead of prolonging it, because in the end, you're only going to hurt yourself and that person more. So that's the way I view it. And it's obviously doing it in a very kind, respectful manner, and just being like, I don't like where things are going, and I think we might have different goals for marriage, and our goals are not aligned, so I don't want to continue with this. And I think you have to be very firm in how you respond, meaning I would encourage blocking that person, ending all communication, and just almost severing that tie to be like, this chapter is closed. Because if you leave that open and let that person be your friend, I think it sets you up for more heartbreak, because there's no finality to that chapter. And again, you, of course, feel really heartbroken and sad for, you know, like letting someone down, or if that person let you down. But I think it's essential because it helps you recognize what you like or dislike about this person. And again, gives you that frame of reference for the future. So I think while I don't recommend anyone to get their heart broken, I think it is key in your journey. Right? Like, I'm not saying go out there and, like, you know, do whatever you can, but it gives you that barometer. And I think it makes you stronger. And eventually you'll come to realize that, hey, now looking back, maybe a few months later, a few years later, this person maybe wasn't all that great. I was looking at them with rose tinted glasses, right? I was just thinking they're the best person in the world. And thankfully it ended. So I feel like it always ends for the best for both people. It's a hard decision to make, but it's one that needs to be made.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Again, I wish someone had told me all of this. I feel like I've made some mistakes too, like without going into too much detail. I feel like sometimes when you're not sure, or you finally get that feeling of like, okay, this isn't going to work out, I always hesitate. I don't know how to respond. And then sometimes I act quickly. And then I regret how I acted. And that's happened to me once or twice. And I don't mean for it to hurt the other person, but sometimes it does, you know? And you have to recognize that the person on the other side has feelings too. I think as women, we're always like, oh, well, we're like the more emotional ones, obviously. But that doesn't mean that like the person on the other side doesn't have feelings, especially if you've been talking for a while or like, you know, have met up a couple times, whatever the situation is, you don't know how the other person feels. So just to be cognizant of that, but also firm in your decision, because, you know, if you've been doing Istikhara, you're not feeling it, if this is not the best decision for you, definitely kind of move on from it. I agree with the blocking or removing or whatever it is. Make sure you're not like seeing this person on your feed, all those things. I would definitely agree. Okay, so we are going to stop right there and start up part two in a couple of weeks, inshallah. I can't wait to release that episode as well. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any feedback, please definitely message us on Instagram at muslima.podcast. I do want to say that Aisha and I do not claim to be professionals in any way. We are both not married. We're just navigating this process and sharing our insights. So please do not take our advice as professional. We're just sharing our experiences and hoping that our advice helps people who are wondering about the same things as us. See you all for the next episode, inshallah.